You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Broke like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing. The good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have back artistic director and conductor John Madden of the Savannah Wind Symphony to talk about the upcoming Fall Enigma concert on Sunday, November 9th at 3 p.m. at the Georgia Southern Armstrong Campus Fine Arts Auditorium, which is located at 11935 Abercorn Street here in Savannah. Welcome back to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, John Madden.
Thank you, Dave. How are you?
Just fine.
Great.
And so things seem to be going great with Savannah Winds.
We're in the process of this first concert cycle of what would be my formal second season. So it's going great. The band is a wonderful group to work with. They're very excited to do more newer things in terms of repertoire, and the standard is raising, and you know, I feel really good about that. The community outreach is growing. Donor contributions are growing. And remember, Savannah Wind Symphony is in its 49th season. So next year is a big deal in terms of the 50th. I don't know if you and I chatted about any of that the last time.
No, not at all.
We have the Boston Brass coming in next year.
Oh, wow.
So we've contracted them for our opening concert in the fall of 26 to kick off the 50th.
And I presume they're a small brass ensemble? Or?
They're a quintet, a professional quintet. Okay. And they've been around for, seems like a decade, if not a little longer. I know some of the original members of that quintet, but they have a tremendous following. They're sponsored in part by Yamaha, band and orchestra instruments, and they go all over the world. And they have a niche, kind of a soft spot, where they collaborate with educational groups and community groups and university bands, and including marching bands. So I'm really excited about that. And then our board of directors has approved commissioning of several works. So the 50th season will have as a companion several fanfares, kind of concert openers, 3-4 minute pieces specifically written for Savannah Wind Symphony. The longtime conductor who you probably knew, a man named Mark Johnson, who passed away recently, a special piece, memorial piece in honor of Mark, is being written by a Louisiana composer. Her name is Julie Giroux. Two other composers have already been commissioned. Really, actually a third, a local composer named Robin Beauchamp. I hope I pronounced his last name correctly.
Yep, that's right.
I've met with him, and I know he's written special pieces for Savannah Philharmonic, and he's got quite a background in writing cinematic kinds of pieces. And so Robin's going to write a piece, and then two composers I know from Michigan, Andrew David Perkins is going to write a piece, and a man named Scott Borma. And it's just exciting. So we're kind of putting all our eggs in that basket right now, focusing for the 50th.
And you generally have 4 concerts each season?
Yes.
And are you going to sort of distribute the celebration over those 4 concerts?
Yes, absolutely. You got it right. So some of these opening pieces can sort of start the concert. In the case of Julie Giroux's piece, that will not be that'll be a more substantial 6-7-8 minute piece. Robin's piece, I believe, is going to be more of a 5-6-7 minute piece. Both Andy and Scott are going to write, you know, 3-4 minute kind of flashy openers to, as you said, distribute them across the season. And we, the Savannah Winds, we're kind of locked into a format of you know, like the concert we're working on now, it doesn't really have a theme. It's just a good concert, a fall concert, but it's not a Pops concert. So the spring concert, similar. For me as a conductor, it's programming it is sort of generated by building it around a signature piece or a project piece, let's say. That's what we do. You know, that's what conductors do. And I'm a band conductor and taught in the university level forever. And, you know, you don't always consider the audience at the university level as much as you do. I need to be in tune with who are the current composers working on art music at a high level. And my community is going to come in and hear that piece because they live in a college town and they're used to that serving up of arts. Well, that's not what a community band audience is about. I mean, Savannah Winds has a unique and rare history in that we were an Armstrong ensemble, and it grew as the Armstrong band leaders at that time said, let's grow this a little bit and invite community members to join our band. In my business, that was known as a town and gown band. Town being us town folks, and gown being those that in academia wear the caps and gowns at the, you know, graduation celebrations and commencements and such. So town and gown is a common term in the band world, and it's quite normal, you know, to have a hybrid band of students and community members until it takes the fork in the road and it's an all student ensemble or an all community ensemble. Well, our connection, not to shift the conversation to history of Savannah Winds, but I've studied a little bit of it. And, you know, they didn't have a band at Armstrong until 1970. And then in 77, they decided to bring in people to help bolster the ranks a little bit. That lasted for a while. You know, you can call that the beginning of the community band. And then the Armstrong band got more specific as a student band and a community band. They'd still share concerts and things like that, but so we mark 1977 as the beginning of our time as Savannah Wind Symphony. The more recent history was when not only Georgia Southern taking the reins on Armstrong, which moved most of the, as I understand it, music offerings to Statesboro, COVID hit. Mark Johnson passes away, and now the newly formed board of directors for Savannah Winds is facing, you know, they're looking at their survival. So our longtime conductor is not here anymore. Armstrong's music offerings have been reduced, but the traditional band, orchestra, choir stuff is happening in Statesboro. So that's when post-COVID, and after Mark's passing, that the band kicked it into gear. What are we going to do? So that's when these auditions occurred and candidates were identified for the position. Candidates from within, by the way. I moved here 3.5 years ago, retired, as we've talked about, from Michigan State. And my wife's family had lived in Savannah since the late 90s. We knew it's a place we would come, love it. And I got my trumpet out. Not being a full-time trumpet player, had to practice a lot to get my chops in shape, as they say. And I landed in a band because in Michigan, I was conducting other community bands. I knew the community band culture. And as you know, Savannah Winds has a good chunk of our personnel, our current music teachers, former retired high school, middle school, elementary band directors. We have military band musicians from Fort Stewart playing in the band. We've got Georgia Southern professors playing in the band, and then the highly motivated amateur community member who, you know, likes to practice and has great skill on their instrument. And so anyway, that turned into a bit of a history run, but I think it's interesting because here we are, among other things, you know, talking about our upcoming concert, but launching a run up to a 50th, which I think is a big deal.
Yeah, it is. And we're here to talk about the fall concert. And the fall concert is really not generally a pre-established topic.
What I feel like I've inherited, and again, the conductor's job is many-fold, but primarily it's programming. It's, you know, curating. What are we going to play? I believe that each concert can tell a story. We could have sub-stories within the big framework of the concert. So Enigma, as a title of the concert, sort of came natural as I built the concert around a transcription of Elgar's landmark piece, The Enigma Variations. And, you know, that's a concert in itself almost. We're doing a reduced version of it by a band composer, arranger extraordinaire. His name was Earl Slocum. Really is well known for several immortal arrangements that, you know, school bands have played. And this arrangement covers half of the variations that are in the original, but they're suitable for the band. He didn't change the key. You get the essence of the piece, and it's really been fun for our players to work on.
And there are a few recorded versions of the Enigma Variations for band. Are they pretty much this arrangement?
They are. Slocum's arrangement is the right amount for us to take on.
Well, let's dive into the concert.
Sure.
We've already talked about the Enigma Variations, and that is sort of the centerpiece of the concert. But there are other pieces that are being done.
Right.
And, for instance, you start off with a Fantasia in G by Timothy Marr.
Timothy Marr. It's a really great piece. Tim Marr was one of those guys in his career who he's recently retired, and he lives in Minnesota, St. Olaf College. And Tim, who is a personal friend, wrote this piece, had to be the early 80s, middle 80s maybe. And of course it incorporates the Beethoven 9 theme in a very unique way. It's one of the reasons why I companioned this piece with sort of that enigma. It's a little bit mysterious as to when the Beethoven theme is woven out through the piece, because it's, I would call this a shimmery fanfare, also in sort of a theme and variation style. But Tim was a composer and conductor side by side all throughout his career, and he contributed this to the band world, and it's been an absolute blast. Here's what he says in the score. Fantasia in G is a joyful celebration for winds and percussion. The piece was inspired by the opening line of Johann von Schiller's poem Ode to Joy. The same text was used by Beethoven in his famed Symphony No. 9. So it was written for the St. Olaf College Band and first performed in January of 1983. So I was right about that time. But gosh, how old is that already? 1983. 40 plus years. It's still a vibrant piece. It's still important in the repertory. And I would say this is a kind of a test. There's some technical spots and things that are inspiring our players, and they're working hard on this. But it's a really brilliant opening selection.
Thank you.
And the second piece is Verdi. This is La Traviata, Prelude to Act 1. And well,
to Act 1 is famous. It's another one of those transcriptions. So Fantasia in G was written for band, not for orchestra.
And this transcription was
close to my heart.
Was done by Leonard Falcone. Leonard Falcone has a rich history with the Michigan State University bands.
He's the grandfather. He's the founder. He was the director of bands at Michigan State for 40 years, 1927 to 1967. He's very famous for having been a virtuoso soloist on the baritone horn / euphonium. Purists know the difference, but it's essentially the same instrument. And then Italian-born, immigrated to the United States. His brother, Nicholas Falcone, was also an American college band director, interestingly, down the road in Ann Arbor. Leonard was at Michigan State for 40 years. Nicholas was at U of M for a short period of time, but that period of time when they were both there. So I played for Leonard Falcone as a retired conductor, as an undergrad. I was the principal trumpet player in the ensemble late in his retirement, where he was sick for a long time. Then he was well, and he came back to the podium at that point in time. I think it was the mid-80s. And he wrote this little concert march, and it had a little cornet solo that had some sort of, some filigree, some ornamentation, and he wanted that to go a specific way. And so I played the solo, and I think I was pretty well known by my peers as I'm going to be able to handle that fine. And I don't think my peers saw or heard any issue with what I was doing. And now, in full disclaimer, I will do a bad imitation of how Leonard Falcone spoke. But he would say, in sort of Italian, not broken English, his English was really good, but the Italian would still come through, and he'd say, "Who's playing the cornet solo? Who is that?" Because he had glasses that you couldn't see his eyes through it. It looked like somebody had put Vaseline all over his glasses. "Who's playing the cornet solo?" Raise my hand. "Dr. Falcone, that's me, sir." "Do it again. Make the 16th notes go slower." So, ba-dum-ba-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum. That's kind of how the tune went, with the little 16th notes. "Much better. Please see me after rehearsal." And he went on to the next thing. Well, long story short, he asked me to come to the office. He still had an office in the music building. "When can you, I can pop in tomorrow morning, and, you know, I have class at whatever, but I'll come see me before class." So it turned into about a 2-hour, 3-hour lesson and storytelling. So I skipped two classes because I'm sitting there at Leonard Falcone's office talking with him. By the way, we worked on the little solo for about 45 seconds. Very good. Put horn down. He picked up his horn. He played his baritone. We put reel-to-reel recordings on in his studio. There are a lot of people of that era, that early 20th century military band background folks at all the big schools. You know, what you're left with was what an immense musician he was. So when he put his pen to a little thing like the Prelude to Act One, you know it's coming from his soul. This is a tiny little 3-minute piece with immense musical potential. That's why I program that kind of thing. The band is really enjoying this.
This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with Global Soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
The Savannah Wind Symphony is hosting its Fall Enigma Concert on Sunday, November 9th at 3 p.m. at the Georgia Southern University Armstrong Campus Fine Arts Auditorium, 11935 Abercorn Street, Savannah. The concert features a wide range of works centered on Elgar's Enigma variations. More information and tickets are available at savannahwindsymphony.com. The Savannah Philharmonic and Philharmonic Chorus, with soloists and guest conductor Christopher James Lees, presents the program Mozart Requiem on Saturday, November 15th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, November 16th at 3 p.m. at the Lucas Theater for the Arts. This concert also features the Philharmonic's principal French horn, Elizabeth Crafton. More information and tickets for Sunday's performance are available at savannahphilharmonic.org. This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have back Artistic Director and Conductor John Madden of the Savannah Wind Symphony to talk about the upcoming Fall Enigma Concert on Sunday, November 9th at 3 p.m. at the Georgia Southern Armstrong Campus Fine Arts Auditorium, which is located at 11935 Abercorn Street here in Savannah. And then we get to the Bayou Breakdown.
Bayou Breakdown. This is cool because the composer is another friend. His name is Brant Carrick. He's a Louisiana native, but he spent most of his career in Kentucky. A brief stint in Ohio at the University of Toledo, where I got to know him pretty well. He's a band guy and sort of like Tim Marr, band conductor, composer, side by side. He hoped to create, and this is from his score, in writing Bayou Breakdown, I hope to create a piece that provide musical and technical challenges for the performers, yet could be immediately enjoyed by the listener, musician, non-musician alike. While the piece was written for his students, it's dedicated to one of his most influential mentors, Frank Wicks, who was the director of bands at LSU. And it's basically got a toe-tapping, knee-slapping, back porch, folksy kind of thing. And I would say, in knowing some of Brant's other music, this would be a great piece. I didn't do it, but to companion it would say Percy Grainger's Molly on the Shore. So Percy Grainger's Molly on the Shore is a test piece for the clarinets. But this piece is a demanding sort of, it's like a single tonguing nightmare. It goes, it keeps leaning on the precision of the single tongue eighth note, which by yourself is no big whoop, but when I'm sitting with 30 other people playing the same line, the articulation clarity and that kind of technical approach, that's a big deal in making or breaking the technique of the piece. But what Brant wanted in the piece the audience is going to get. If they don't tap their toe or want to clap along, we're not doing it right. But it's really it's a great departure. And again, you're describing the concert in order, and you know the concert starts flashy and then it goes subtle and now it's toe tapping. It's, you know, a concert needs to be a journey. It needs to be a fun journey that keeps the listener kind of moving through the compendium of styles, speeds, colors, all of that. This has really been a lot of fun.
Well, and that's very true, because the next piece is by Frank Tichilli. And in my bias, every concert of band concert needs a piece by Frank Tichilli.
You're right. He is a prolific band composer. And Frank's background is as a trumpet player, and he's a great conductor. But he really, in the last 30 years, has carved out so many different kinds of pieces. I've done his symphony for band. I've done some of his saxophone concerto. He has big artistic pieces, but he also has written pieces for younger students. He has a suite of Cajun folk songs. He has a young band piece that involves shaker tunes, "'Tis a Gift to Be Simple," and just and then profound arrangements of things like "Amazing Grace," this arrangement of "Shenandoah."
Yeah, Frank Tichilli's "Simple Gifts" is actually like a four short movement piece.
Yeah, you're right on it. Done it many times. This is one ABA form. All of Frank's pieces have very interesting developments. And that's not always the case in a young band. And this is not a young band piece by any stretch, but he'll introduce the compositional style where I've introduced the theme, and here's the tune, and here's a second version of it. And now it's just going to be, we're in no man's land as far as where is this piece going? Where is the, what's the journey of this section we're in right now? And it leads to a payoff of the return. And in this case, the return is this ethereal floating treatment of the tune in the form of a flute trio in canon. So everybody knows the tune Shenandoah. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-dee-dum. So this flute trio starts out sort of in canon. Ba-dee, ba-dee, ba-dee-dee-dee. It all spins out like a canon or around. And three incredible flute players in a very talented flute section are featured. And it's his last expression mark at the end of the piece, where the full group is playing the tune, he writes the expression marking exalted. And you don't think of a folksy tune like Shenandoah as being exalting. It's just the way the program flowed for me is that I'm going to, like you said, I'm going to follow the Bayou Breakdown for our toe tap and hand clap and piece by what I think is profoundly rich and good music by Frank, another good friend and guy I've collaborated with several times.
And my favorite version, this band version of Shenandoah, is by the Michigan State Symphonic Band.
There you go. You know, when that was new, that was conducted by my colleague John Whitwell, and I was involved in that recording session as well, and Frank came to us and asked us to do the original recording. Yeah, really good recording. Fantastic.
Thank you.
And our tour of America continues with the next tune, and the next tune is Three Postcards from Manhattan.
Right. So the larger title of the piece is called Metroplex, Three Postcards from Manhattan. It's by the composer Robert Sheldon. Robert Sheldon is a super well-known composer both in the art music end of the band wind ensemble writing, but he is very well-known among our educational constituents who teach middle school and high school band and orchestra. There's three sections. It's kind of, as he says, postcards or portraits. So it's a portrait of Manhattan's cityscape. He says that Metroplex opens with a vision of the New York City skyline, evoking the looming buildings and the concrete canyons. Now, I'll make a musical reference that I've shared with the band. If you know the American composer William Schumann, he wrote the New England Triptych, Chester, Be Glad Then America. He wrote a piece called The George Washington Bridge. Schumann's piece, The George Washington Bridge, is epic and monumental in terms of the image of the architecture of the bridge in the city. I think Sheldon has done an amazing job at the beginning of this piece, and I've told the band, this feels like George Washington Bridge. So it's, you know, it's not a new technique for composers to borrow from each other and imitate each other. John Williams would be the first guy to say, yep, I took that right from Scriabin. And it's okay, but certainly doesn't undervalue John Williams' incredible genius. But the composers influence and borrow from each other. So as program music goes, then the melody travels to the heart of what would be an urban jazz scene. You know, famous nightclubs and bebop and, you know, everything's humming along. And then the piece finishes with sort of a wild taxi ride. And, you know, you hear, you know, you hear horns honking and, you know, just chaos. And then it kind of comes in and weaves all three at the end. But maybe the idea of enigma, the mystery, the unknown, the puzzle not being put together, maybe that fits well with all of this. But it, you know, building a program in contrast, it just seemed like, I think the band will really enjoy it. It's in our wheelhouse, and it's kind of in that category of, it's just been pure fun to play this.
Well, and this starts as a monumental William Schumann, George Washington Bridge. But it sort of ends with, I'd say, a little Gershwin, American in
Paris.
Yeah,
it does. Definitely. Definitely. The horns honking and such.
Right.
And yeah, all over. Absolutely. For sure. For sure. So it's been fun. It's really been fun. So it's coming together. A couple more rehearsals left.
Thank you.
Metroplex is the first half closer.
And the next piece is Music for a Festival, and this is Overture.
So Gordon Jacob, the British composer, very well known in the tradition of the other Brits who wrote for band, Vaughan Williams, Holst, except a 20th century composer. This is actually a piece that has a total of 13 different movements, of which the overture is the second movement, because it starts with a brass quintet playing the entrata, and then it goes to number two, the overture. So this is a piece from my youth that I loved playing. We're only doing the overture, which works great as an opener to the second half of the concert. So this is just perfect to set up the second half, and I would describe it as majestic with lots of chromaticism, and the band is on their toes when they're playing this one. It's really been fun.
And the last piece is Rolling Thunder.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Part of me is such a traditional band guy. You can't end a concert without a march. I love marches. It's going to be a long time before I quit playing marches. I'm sure I never will. This is what in the circus band world is called a screamer, meaning super fast. Fillmore wrote a lot of them. But Rolling Thunder is basically the sound under the big top when the horses would go around the ring. You know, when the horses would all come out and you'd just hear, there'd be three rings and there'd be four or five horses in each ring and they're just doing circles. And that's Rolling Thunder. What this march features is the trombone section. And I got to say, we have a terrific trombone section. I mean, every section in the band is terrific. This march and those players, it's a little bit like throwing raw meat to a tiger. They'll be all over it. So what will happen at the end of Enigma Variations, the second to last piece, is it's a good output of probably 12 minutes of music in the version we're doing. And it's going to take the audience on this journey. I mean, remember, we talked about Nimrod. But when the final themes are woven together in the last variation, it's a big ender. It ends big. So the audience is going to be pretty gassed, the way I see it. So we may as well hit them with Rolling Thunder. Just put a cap on it. And it's a concert we are enjoying preparing. And, you know, really looking forward to November 9, as you said, 3:00 at the Armstrong, Georgia Southern Armstrong campus in the Fine Arts Theater. We'll be right back.
Tonight we've had a wonderful exploration of this concert coming up with John Madden, who is the artistic director and conductor of the Savannah Wind Symphony. And they'll be performing their Fall Enigma concert on Sunday, November 9th at 3 p.m. at the Georgia Southern Armstrong Campus Fine Arts Auditorium, which is located on the south side at 11935 Abercorn Street in Savannah. And I want to thank you so very much, John, for being again on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable.
Thank you, Dave. It's always a pleasure, and I feel like we got a new friendship here and look forward to chatting anytime you have time for us.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.